relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person to person, spreading and spreading, sickening some of them, but not all of them, and the ones that it doesn't sicken don't know they have it, and then they give it to even more people because they didn't recognize they were, right? Instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person, potentially mutating and becoming more virulent and drug resistant along the way, now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops with every vaccinated person. A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus does not infect them, the virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this.
I guess 4 years of Russia, 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 and I have Donald Trump's tax returns wasn't enough. Now it's, if you're vaccinated, well, COVID just disappears, Rachel Maddow. I thought she was meant to be MSNBC's smart one. Apparently not. Welcome, dear friends. You're listening to America First with me, Sebastian Gorka. This is one-on-one. This is where we go beyond the talking points, beyond the sound bites, with somebody who knows of what they speak, and we give them an opportunity to go deep dive. Today, I feel very, very intimidated because on his bio, I know he's a good guy, and he's a smart guy, and he's got an accent that, you know, it's a little bit like mine. But he's published 7 books. I've only written 3. It's a delight to have him with us. He is the author, most recently, of The Madness of Crowds from The Spectator, Douglas Murray. Welcome back to One on One.
Hey, great to be with you, Sebastian. And the 3 books isn't so bad, you know. It's not bad going at all.
Well, here I didn't realize until I got the final invitation. That's the only way you get onto C-SPAN for the 2-hour-long interview as an author. That's their, you know, it's got to be 3, not 2. Not 1, it's like the holy hand grenade of Antioch, it must be 3, and we did that, and it was quite a shock. I was in the studio and said, so what are we going to talk about for an hour? I said, no, Sebastian, it's for 2 hours. We're not going to do that to you today. We would love to do that. Follow this man right now, Douglas K. Murray. Did you ever think The Madness of Crowds would actually be even more applicable, Douglas, now than when you wrote the book, given what we have witnessed in the last 2 years when it comes to the coronavirus?
You know, what I tried to do with that book was to lay out what I thought was the sort of vulnerability we had as a society, that we had become incredibly certain about things that actually weren't very certain. And at the same time, we'd become to doubt things that were very obvious. As I say in The Madness of Crowds, things that everyone knew till yesterday suddenly became up for grabs. I give the examples of endless things in the book. One, which has just kept on happening, is, you know, until yesterday, if you said, what is a woman? Everybody could answer you. Everybody on planet Earth could answer you. And now the smartest, as it were, most overeducated imbeciles in the world say, well, what is a woman? That's a really tricky one.
How many genders there are? That's a tough one, right? Yeah, how many?
Yeah, absolutely. So these sorts of things were already in the atmosphere, you know, and then Corona has come along. And I think it's just added to that just madness. And what you've just shown, that clip of Rachel Maddow, absolutely speaks to the point of it. I'm so glad you highlight that clip. It's one of my absolute favorite media moments of the last year. And here's why. It's because Rachel Maddow is so damn certain about something she doesn't know anything about. So far as I know, up until 2020, 2021, Rachel Maddow had never spoken about pandemics, virology, or anything else. She'd never studied the subject. She'd never had any particularly strong views about it. She'd never written about or spoken about vaccines or anything more. And here she is, in 2021, giving this sort of sermon to the American public, saying, these are the facts. This is what we know. And this is the case. And I'm telling you the case. And she's wrong. And she's wrong. Now, and here's the interesting thing, and this is one of the things I pointed out in the Madness of Crowds, is, you know, we all get things wrong in our lives. But we should always try to be open to correct things when we get them wrong. And you see, somebody in the position that Rachel Maddow is in cannot do that because they have decided on the line. They've decided on what the truth is. And then when unfortunate facts come along, they just have to keep going because they've already got this line. They've already said this is what happens and the virus stops when that happens. So they've got themselves into this position, but it is an absolutely classic demonstration of why the American public have, quite understandably, lost faith and trust in the media.
Well, let's stay on this for a moment, Douglas. So this question of getting it wrong, admitting you're wrong, and trying to do a course correction after we had the elections in 16, it was, what, a month in October, a month before the election, we had the New York Times say Hillary Clinton has a 92% chance of winning. On the day of the election, the Huffington Post says she has a 96% chance of winning. Then she is beaten, she is trounced, and in January, the publisher of the New York Times holds an editorial meeting and said, I guess we got it wrong. I guess we were in some kind of echo chamber and we need to broaden the aperture. Have you seen any sign in any mainstream legacy media in the last 5 years of the broadening of the aperture? Or just, how about this, one case on a serious issue like Corona or like elections of somebody in the legacy media saying, yep, I screwed up. I'm sorry, Douglas.
I think this is one of the saddest things of the last decade and one of the biggest missed opportunities. You see, the way I see it is that 2016 in America was, among other things, a very important moment for a segment of the American mainstream, center ground, and indeed left, to make an incredibly important turn. A turn they had not been able to make to date and which it had taken the right a long time to recognize. And that was a turn that, for better or worse, was encapsulated in Donald Trump's campaign. A recognition that America had lost control of its borders, a recognition that America had been losing its manufacturing, its industry, and many jobs to China and other countries around the world, and a recognition, among other things, that there's a desire in the American people to feel good about their nation because their nation is good. Now, these are just three of the things. I could list many others, and you, Sebastian, could list many, many more. But these were very important things for the people who cared about winning elections to recognize. And the Republican Party in 2016 did recognize this, and their candidate won. And instead of recognizing these were really important things, the left and the center and a part of the right decided not to make the turn. They decided to pretend that the turn had not happened or that they could ignore it. Or that they could get rid of it. They could destroy the turn, and this actually it's one of the lesser problems of what happened after that. But it is one of the problems that such a significant swathe of American opinion formers just couldn't accept the results of the election because it was a problem for themselves and their own side. You know, what have the Democrats got to say now about migration? There's no reason why a left-wing party can't get on top of migration. It's happened in Europe. Certain left-wing governments have been able to get in migration under control in Europe. There's no reason why it has to be a right-wing issue. There's no reason why it shouldn't be a left-wing issue, in fact, a Democrat Party issue, that American laborers are losing their jobs or being undercut by foreign competition. There's no reason that should be a right-wing issue. It could be a left-wing issue. And yet, because the left and the centrists were not willing to make this acknowledgement, this turn, they just wasted their time and everybody else's for years. And there's still no demonstration that they've learned from it. I think it's a great sadness for America as a whole.
Yeah, I want to examine what the possible logical scenarios are for both the media and the left if they persist in isolating themselves in these cocoons. In the meantime, please follow this man at Douglas K. Murray on Twitter. The website is douglasmurray.net. He has a new book coming out. Number 8 will be coming out in April. But in the meantime, if you haven't read it, you have to. This man is a wordsmith. He is a truth teller. It is the madness of crowds. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One. If you enjoy this show, don't just subscribe to the podcast on Spotify. Tell your friends, write a review, and share it with those around you. This is the one of the few places where you get to get truly deep dive on the issues that matter. Back with Douglas One-on-One after these messages.
You're listening to America First with Dr. G.
If you haven't done so already, please join us for our trip later this year. It is the Stand With Israel tour. The China virus made us have to cancel it last year, but we've got our new dates. They can't stop us. It is November 30th to December 9th. We are going to walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. Even if you have been to Israel before, you haven't been with me and my colleague Dinesh D'Souza, it will be the trip of a lifetime. Reserve your places today. Call 855-565-5519. That's 855-565-5519. Or just go to standwithisraeltour.com to secure your places today. You've had enough of being at home. You've had enough of being told you can't travel. Join us this November. Standwithisraeltour.com. Douglas, you talked about the disconnect, the years now of the left and the media, which is, of course, the same, being unable to deal with their mistake or their lack of understanding what was happening in politics in 2015, 2016. So let me ask you, what are the scenarios for both the media and the left? Number one, as long as you have the Jeff Bezos of the world, you know, drop a few billion here and there, like, you know, they're buying a new Pekingese. You know, these things are vanity projects. The Washington Post is clearly a vanity project. Do market forces not apply? And they can do it forever? Or is there a moment of collapse? How long can the party, the left, for example, be disconnected? How long can that disjunction between reality and that quote-unquote political elite last before there's some kind of necessary self-introspection? Or can they stretch it out forever?
You know, you remember there was a famous law, Herbert Stein's law. Stein's law is things that cannot go on won't. And it's a fine law, but I've often tweaked it, a slightly more cynical version, is that in my experience, things that cannot go on usually do.
That's a moderate tweak there, Douglas, a moderate tweak.
It's an important one, though, isn't it? How many times have you, I, and many others looked at situations in government, in the media, in society, and said, that just can't go on. And yet, you know, a few years later, you look back and you see that's what you said, and the thing in question is still going on. You know, like incompetency of this scale, that can't go on. And it goes on. So my experience would suggest this disconnect can go on an awfully long time. As long as the New York Times is in funds, and it is, it'll just keep doing what it needs to do to speak to its base, as it now thinks of its readers as being. Now, I think, however, in America, that a very, very important struggle is on in this regard. And I'm not at all downhearted about it. The American media is in a very interesting place. It's quite different from in my own country of birth. in Great Britain, where there's a serious right-wing media as well as some left-wing media. In America, there's very little right-wing media of a conventional kind and a huge amount of left-wing media. So almost all of the newspapers are left-wing in America. Now, there's no reason in nature why that needs to be the case. Just as there's no reason in nature why the tech platforms have to be run by people who, like Bezos and Zuckerberg and others, make these cack-handed attempts to sort of silence voices, particularly when they're voices from the right. There's no reason why that has to be the case. There are many significant figures, philanthropists, entrepreneurs in America, who could, if they got organized, turn this around. And I think that that may well happen in the years ahead. My view is that people are coming through the period of sort of disorientation on the platforms. You remember about sort of five, maybe a bit longer years ago, people didn't really quite know what Twitter was doing. They didn't know, for instance, about shadow banning. They didn't know that Twitter could pretend to be publishing something but actually be dampening it down. People are so wise to that now. What person using YouTube who knows about politics doesn't now know what a censor YouTube is? And so we're sort of coming through that period. And people who aren't particularly technologically advanced, are just users of information like all of us are starting to be and have started to become aware of this. So now we're getting into a very exciting phase. And for America, it should be a particularly exciting phase because this is the country of innovation. In America, we should now be in this stage where new platforms arise, and they're already arising, which not only take on these other platforms, these old platforms, but beat them. And I think it's the same with the newspapers. America has a number of great newspapers. They punch above their weight. They have enormous, significant reach. And they may be in a minority when they are on the right, but their reach is incalculable. So I'm not at all downhearted about this. And I don't like the self-pitying on the right, which you sometimes hear, which is sort of all of big tech's against us, the media's against us, and so on. My question and my challenge to you on that then is, so what are you going to do to change it?
And you're not
There's
worried.
No wave in America you can't change it.
Right. No, I mean, this is the land of opportunity and invention, you know, of Ford and everybody else. But are you not concerned that the Parlors, the Getters, et cetera, will create not competitors, but because of the scale discrepancy, it will become a ghetto for conservative voices?
Well, that's certainly a possibility. And that's one of the things that I think people have worried about with Parler and Getter and so on. So one of the reasons why so far these platforms to an extent haven't been able to take out, for instance, Twitter, is that people actually do like to take on the other side. You know, it's why it's sort of fun occasionally watching Rachel Maddow. I mean, you wouldn't want your television to be tuned into her all the time. But it is enjoyable to see somebody with a totally opposing point of view. And to an extent, as long as platforms like Twitter exist in their current form, they give people the opportunity to see people with totally different opinions and then sort of wrestle it out and wrangle it out. And it's true that there's a risk of a sort of ghettoization otherwise. But who knows, something constructive will come from this. Same thing with Rumble. Something constructive will come from this. There's no inevitability of the current tech platforms. And another, just one other quick thing on this. It's taken a while for people to work this out, but a former employee at several of the major Silicon Valley firms put it best, and I quote this in The Man of Crowds some years ago, and he said, the business model of the tech platforms is based on the discovery that people are willing to correct other people's behavior for free.
Yes.
That is, every time you engage on Twitter with some idiot from the other side or your own side, you're falling out and you're telling them they're an idiot, they're telling you you're an idiot. Every time you're doing that, nobody's getting paid for it. We're all spending our own free time doing it. And the only person that's getting rich off it are the tech lords. So people are also aware of that increasingly, I think, as well. We're in a period, as I've often said, like the period after the invention of the printing press. It took a very long time for the effect of Gutenberg to be felt. We're feeling it much faster. but we're feeling it and we're using our feet and our senses to work it out. All I know is we shouldn't be working in our spare time for the tech overlords.
We shouldn't be working for that for free, that's for sure. As I wrote to a few big media executives in a little private brief after the elections. By the way, guys, you know you've got a market of about 74 million people if you wish to create an alternative social media platform. That is a rather large market. We're talking to the author of The Madness of Crowds. He's with The Spectator. You've got to follow him on Twitter, at Douglas K. Murray. Also, Douglas Murray, back with Douglas Murray after this break. We've all been there. You get out of the shower, out of the bath, reach for the towel, and it's like sanding yourself down with a piece of cardboard. Why? Mike Lindell worked it out. They were importing towels from abroad, adding softness, and when you get home, it's just a con. Do what we've done. Order the incredible new MyPillow towels made with American cotton right here in the United States. Soft and absorbent as long as you own them. The six-piece set, two bath towels, two hand towels, two washcloths, regularly $109.99. You gonna get them for $39.99. If you use my name, go to MyPillow.com, click on the new radio list of specials for deep, deep discounts with promo code G-O-R-K-A. You've never tried a towel like it. 1-800-829-8468. 1-800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A.
The most awesome pipes in talk radio. Sebastian Gorka.
If you enjoy, dear friends, the content here on America First, check out my new locals platform. It's my new community. Direct access to me, Dr. G, and exclusive content you can't find anywhere else. Join today, gorka.locals.com. That's gorka.locals.com, gorka.locals.com. Douglas, right at the beginning of our discussion, you mentioned the trans extremists. As I tweeted out when I heard the news on Monday morning about who won the best actress at the Golden Globes, the trans swimmer who trounced the other swimmer from Penn State, and then what was the third thing? It was oh yes, the winner of Jeopardy, a rather masculine looking woman. Here's my this came from another radio host, my friend Chris Plant, giving full credit. Could you comment on this? Because I think this is the issue that's going to break the left's back, the trans agenda. If a man in a skirt wins Jeopardy, if two husky, large men are winning the female swimming contests, and a man who has the chromosomes of a male wins Best Actress at Golden Globes, doesn't it mean that men are better than women in all of these fields? And where are the feminists, Douglas?
Oh, you have just led me on to the most dangerous discussion of our time. Okay, here we go.
Where are the feminists, well, Douglas? Where's Title IX?
The truth is the feminists are speaking up. One of the developments of recent years has been, particularly outside of America, feminists have been speaking up. American feminists of a great older school like Camille Paglia have been speaking up for some time.
The classics. I'm talking about the new wave ones, who are deafening by their silence.
I agree. The problem, I wouldn't even call them feminists. What I would say is kind of young kids. Let's put it like that. The sort of teens and 20 somethings, the people who we always hear about in publishing houses, who announce that, you know, the publishing house can't publish the next bestseller by J.K. Rowling because it could potentially offend their non-binary friend. I mean, that, by the way, was something that was actually said. That wasn't my invention. But it's those people. I don't even think we're talking about a school of, as it were, feminists. I think it's just a generation who has not realized that trans rights and women's rights rub against each other very badly.
Now, that's the nub. Isn't that the nub, Douglas? That if you know, women's rights cannot not exist as we perceive them to be in the 20th century, if if it's just nullified by I can be a woman if I deem myself a woman.
Yeah, it totally undermines the feminist cause, and that's why, as I say, I mean, I say in the Man of the Crowd, it's notable actually the number of left wing feminists who started to point this out in recent years. And by the way, I should just mention what something else. I and perhaps you in this regard might confess actually we have a certain amount of male privilege in this regard. This is a phrase I've never liked to use, but there is in this discussion some male privilege, because I say things about trans which, when my female friends say the same thing, they get unbelievable flack for from the trans lobby. Now, I don't know whether that's because they know that they can't particularly impress me or make me feel any kind of fear. I'm quite hard to put off dealing with subjects that I want to deal with. But I also think there's something very interesting. The victimization of women who speak out about the trans thing is noticeably stronger than any attack on people like you or me.
So let me just. This is fascinating. So for example, you and I can say things that J.K. Rowling, as a biological woman, can't.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reason it's rather like the apostate thing in Islam. As you know, like Ayaan Hirsi Ali annoys Islamists far more than you or I do. Because they see her as being a much bigger threat, somebody who's been in Islam and then leaves it.
Yeah.
And I think something similar is happening in the feminist trans thing. I try this out almost deliberately sometimes, actually. J.K. Rowling says things that are so mild and so true and so careful. And she's no kind of bigot about anyone. Like all of us, actually, she thinks that basically where there are trans people who are actually trans people and not just people who are wanting attention, which I think is sometimes the case, or people who are mentally disturbed, which is sometimes the case. J.K. Rowling, like most of us, wants actual trans people to be treated with respect and dignity like all other human beings. She's never said anything otherwise. I sometimes try things out just to see, as it were, what I can get away with. And I always get away with it on the trans thing. I said a little bit that if you look at the photos of the people on social media going for J.K. Rowling, many of them look like figures that you haven't seen outside of a painting by Hieronymus Bosch.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Deepest voice in talk radio, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back to America First with Douglas Murray. Let's pull back. Let's get a little bit strategic. Let's get up to the 50,000 feet altitude, Douglas. As a very keen observer of politics on both sides of the Atlantic, can you help navigate, give us a new taxonomy? I mean, I grew up in England, born in England, grew up in London, saw the rise of Margaret Thatcher, saw that as true statecraft. And then we see what happened after that. What are the right labels today? The left, right, even the conservative socialist has kind of broken down. Do you buy into the nationalist vice, the globalist, or is it the disconnected elites vice, the working class? Have you found new labels for what is happening on both sides of the Atlantic?
The left-right thing has broken down quite significantly, I think. I'm not totally comfortable with the sort of nationalist-globalist dichotomy because I think it's, well, first of all, because I'm well, without getting it too bogged down, I have lots of criticisms of the nature of the term nationalism, because it means different things in different places. And there are places where I think it's a very fine thing and places where it's a very dodgy thing. I mean, you know, as I said in Berlin just before the pandemic struck, you know, when Europeans are critical of nationalism or indeed even patriotism, it isn't because we don't trust, say, Americans with patriotism. It isn't because we don't trust, I don't know, Nigerians or Ecuadorians with patriotism. It's because we don't trust Europeans with patriotism, because we don't trust them with nationalism, specifically because we don't trust the Germans. And that is just a residue fear, belief.
But that's because it's
not going to go away.
But that's because thanks to the 20th century, nationalism has an ethnic content in the European context, which it doesn't in the American.
And it's just, you know, we're still in living memory of just about living memory of that catastrophe, almost destroyed our continent of birth. And there are just societies after societies across Europe that are still struggling to come to terms with it. Look at the current row in France over the presidential election. Yet again, you know, it goes back to a debate about history. How can France feel pride in itself and get around the problem of the 1940s in France? You know, it remains a living dilemma, a living problem. So I'm very concerned about the nationalism, globalism, well, for that.
So what are better labels?
I think probably one of the few that you can go for is small statist, big statist still. I think that still holds, broadly speaking, because here's a very interesting development that's happened particularly since the Conservative government of Boris Johnson got into power. We've now got an increasing number of governments in Europe, and I think I would include Britain in this, that have effectively decided that the way forward is to be what we would have called right-wing on identity issues, to not be fearful of patriotism, for instance. Now, as it happens, Boris Johnson's relatively weak on this, and I wrote about this in the Telegraph on Sunday. But the thing they have come to is this. You're relatively right-wing in the way we used to think of it on things to do with patriotism. So you're not scared of patriotism. You're not scared of talking about the we of the nation. But that doesn't mean that you're right-wing on economics as well. In fact, you go left-wing on economics. Now, that's what the Johnson government in Britain has been doing. Record borrowing in peacetime, tax rises, not tax cuts, massive public spending, and particularly massive increased public spending on an unreformed health service. Now, this isn't only an ideological thing. It's something that they recognize works at the polls. And the same thing, I think, you could say is the case in France and across certain other parts of Europe. There's been a recognition that the way to power in effectively welfare states, which, of course, America is not, but that effectively the way to power in welfare states is to be strong on the national identity thing and spend. Now, I don't know how long that lasts for. My suspicion is that it will only last as long as the economic party lasts. But that's become in Europe the path to power. America, it's different, because in America, there is still a significant chunk of the American public who do not believe that increased borrowing, astronomic public spending is the way forward. And as we saw recently, even a couple of members of the Democratic Party have that worry and that belief.
So big government vice small government. It's the easiest moniker.
I think it's one of the very few that you can identify as existing as a divide, yes.
And how are things faring? Give us an update. Give us a snapshot of what's happening in the UK. I think many of us had high hopes of Boris Johnson, but I don't know whether it was his bout with COVID or his new paramour, but he hasn't quite lived up to the classic conservative Thatcherite vision, has he?
He hasn't. And, you know, much like America, this is in part a problem of the 1980s. You know, I mean, in America, quite understandably, people always say, you know, where is the new Reagan? Where is the Reagan? And in Britain, certainly on the right, the question is always, where is the Thatcher? Boris Johnson is certainly no Thatcher. Certainly he's not shown himself to be. And by the way, I should just point out on this, one of his MPs said to me some time ago, well, Douglas, you've got to remember that Margaret wasn't Margaret until about 1981. Now, that's true in some ways, although she did have very, very clear principles from the beginning. But it wasn't until she started to win on the economic front from about 1981 onwards that she really got her feet under the desk and managed to make the reforms she wanted. But here's the thing. The thing that made her different from Boris Johnson was, among other things, that Margaret Thatcher was incredible on the detail. Yes. She wasn't just fearsome. She didn't just talk about it. She wouldn't have just sent tweets about it. As you can see from the papers that have been released under the 30-year rule, and which Charles Moore writes about in his excellent three-volume biography of Margaret Thatcher, you can see the documents that Margaret Thatcher worked on later night to send back to the civil service.
Yeah.
Things where she would write in the margin in her own hand in pen, no, I said this wasn't the case. I want it to be this. She would return things like almost like a schoolmistress sending back homework that wasn't good enough. It wasn't what she'd asked for. She was always on top of the detail like that. It was one of the geniuses that she had. She wasn't just in instinctively great. It wasn't just that she worked hard. It wasn't just that she had a body made of iron. It wasn't any of these things or any of these things on their own. It was that she was always on top of all of the detail.
It reminds me.
And she expected that of everyone else too. And that was not the, that is not the case with Boris.
Dr. G is in the house on America First.
More with Douglas Murray. Welcome back. How much of it, of what you're writing about, and you've revealed enough, thank you so much, Douglas, how much of it has to do with secularism and self-hatred?
Well, there's a huge amount of that. A huge amount of that. What I wrote about in The Strange Death of Europe, which applies so much to America as well, is this thing of a sort of looking for stories to tell ourselves, you know? You run out of a story, and human beings need stories. And we had stories. And by the way, the term story isn't meant to be at all derogatory. It doesn't mean it's untrue. But for instance, the story of Christianity is a story that kept our civilization running for two millennia. The story of America is a story that has inspired not just Americans, millions of Americans, but millions and millions of people around the world for centuries. Now, if you strip away these stories, you either have this void, which is where, sadly, a lot of young people in particular can find themselves and they struggle through, or you have to invent new stories. And what we've seen in America in recent years in particular has been an attempt, mainly by the left, to invent new stories. What is the 1619 Project? But an attempt to invent a new story to believe in. But here's the catch. It's a story where America is all guilty. It's a story where America is all bad. It's a story where everyone who founded this country is appalling. But I think there's a way out of that. And I would, by the way, mention it to you in one single statistic. Year on year, various international organizations, including the UN, chart where people in the world want to move. So much of the world wants to migrate. So much of the world wants to move from the countries they're in, from good countries, from benighted countries, from peaceful countries, and from countries at war. What's the number one country still this year, as in every previous year, that people want to come to?
The one that we are told was built on racism and slavery, right? That's the one, Douglas.
Yep. You know, there is no significant movement to Eritrea or Nigeria,
or Somalia,
or Tunisia, Somalia, or anywhere else. Nobody is looking for the great freedom of China. You do not see people breaking through the borders of China, apart from North Korea, which is the only country in the world less free than China. Apart from there, you see nobody wanting to move to China. Now, we should take a lesson from this. There's something we've been doing right in America, which means it's something we should probably keep doing.
Well, that's why it's all the more important to save this republic, because if this one falls, there is nowhere else to escape to. And I say that as the child of those who escaped a communist dictatorship. Well, you've teased it enough. I want to read the book now. I don't want to wait till April. It is.
You can pre-order.
All right, you can pre-order it right now. The War on the West. Do it, my friends. Do it right now. And all that is left to say is, Douglas, God bless you for being one of the few truth tellers out there, because as I've found in the last 3 years, especially during COVID, the virtue we lack the most is courage, and courage is the virtue that makes all the other ones possible. God bless you, Douglas Murray. Follow and read this man. You've been listening to America First One-on-One with me, Sebastian Gorka. Wherever you are, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in. Stay frosty.
Fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
City Council member Vicky Palladino says she'll never disclose if she's vaccinated against COVID.
I don't need to show you my papers. This is not Nazi Germany.
Boom! Drop that mic. Wow. That's in New York City, Councilwoman Vicky Palladino. We need more like that. Welcome, dear friends. This is America First with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too close to the fire. Maybe I don't have the requisite perspective broadcasting as we do from the swamp. But I think something's happening. I think something may be happening. People have had enough. Why? Because even if you're not political, you've had a feeling, you've had your spider sense tingle for over a year that you're just being lied to. Not only that, the people who are lying to you incessantly, inordinately, every single day and double at the weekends, want to control your life with restrictions that have no basis in reality. We just found out from the CDC. I don't think that hiring that Democrat strategist did a lot of good for Ms. Walensky, because she's saying things I don't think she means to admit to, such as the fact that 40% of those who are in hospital counted as COVID cases aren't there because of COVID. They're there because they broke their leg or were concussed at the football game. That's the latest admission, until we have this one. Now we have the morbidity issue. How sick are people in the hospitals, and what are they truly sick from? This is Rochelle Walensky, Cut 4.
The overwhelming number of deaths, over 75%, occurred in people who had at least four comorbidities. So really, these are people who were unwell to begin with.
So what's the real figure then? We've got to get Dr. McCullough back. Let's have him on the show. Let's do a whole hour with Dr. Peter McCullough, one of the handful of doctors who is telling the truth. Actual practitioners, not people who've been sitting on their tuckers in some bureaucratic job for 37 years, like the little fascist Fauci. 37 years he's been the director, and he's taking home $413,000 of your dollars every year as the bureaucrat. He's just about to retire and get $350,000 retirement. That's theft. That's what that is. These people aren't doctors. They're not practitioners. And they're telling us finally the truth. Is it collapsing like a house of cards? Well, there are certain journalists who see that and are prepared to call it out. And I don't mean Joe Rogan. We can discuss Joe Rogan because I think he has become a phenomena, a guy who, what is he? He's a former MMA fighter, a host of, what was it, Fear Factor, that reality show? And now he's the most influential provider of actual real information with his interviews for hours at length with individuals like Dr. McCullough, individuals like Dr. Malone, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine. Who's doing three-hour interviews in the legacy media? By the way, when it comes to legacy media, you know, guys, I'm with Newsmax, okay? Fox royally, royally messed up when they call the election for Biden in Arizona. And there are serious, serious issues with Fox. I don't know if it can be salvaged. However, I'm not going to disrespect everybody there because Tucker, he's got stones, okay? And I have to congratulate. I texted him right now and I see on my Google, what is it? The alerts, Media Matters got tied in a knot and quoted me because what did I do? I congratulated Jesse Waters. Jesse Waters, after months of this silly rotation of their hosts at 7 p.m., he's got it. He's got the 7 p.m. slot. He will be the new permanent host of the Jesse Waters Show. And what is Media Matters? Oh, Media, are you watching? Are you little, the guys in your basement? What was it? Dan Tamble Jr. says they're typing in the basement as their mummy brings them Hot Pockets. That image, I can never. Media Matters with their mummy bringing them Hot Pockets as they're tapping in the basement, and along with what's his face, Zachy thingy, squeaky voice. Media Matters has this is the headline. This is so good. Fox News names misinformation machine Jesse Waters. Oh really? Because Rachel Maddow, she's like what, a purveyor of the truth? I bet those beta males at Media Matters actually fancy Rachel Maddow, despite the fact that, you know, yes, they still probably do. They probably think she's cute. That haircut is so cute. A woman who, what did she say? What's that cut we had? Yes, let's play that cut again. Okay, this is Rachel Maddow. This is going to be an evergreen. Let's put it on my Insta replay machine in front of me, because this is what she said about the magic power of vaccines. Cut one from yesterday.
Instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person to person, spreading and spreading, sickening some of them, but not all of them. And the ones that it doesn't sicken don't know they have it. And then they give it to even more people because they didn't recognize they were. Right. Instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person, potentially mutating and becoming more virulent and drug resistant along the way. Now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops with every vaccinated person. A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus does not infect them, the virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this.
Or not, because we have reports of up to 40% of the people who are in hospital with the breakout infections have been vaccinated. I guess that makes you not so much of a journalist. But there are those who are true journalists who are calling out people like Rochelle Walensky, Rachel Maddow, and others, and even people on the Supreme Court. We need to get her back on this show. Megyn Kelly, cut three.
What's happening here is one far lefty trying to minimize the embarrassment of another. But that is not Rochelle Walensky's job. She's supposed to be loyal to the truth. She's supposed to represent us. She's supposed to give it to us straight. not act as the PR hack of liberal icon Sonia Sotomayor. But she refuses to just be honest. And here, it is not her own COVID hawk hysteria motivating her. It's her partisanship. And we know it.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. These people don't think they work for us. They don't care that we pay their salaries. They're flacks. They're hacks. They're propagandists. They've got a cover for that cretin in the Supreme Court, Sotomayor, and her lies about 100,000 children being hospitalized right now with COVID. It's not your job, but it's slipping. We're seeing behind the curtain, and Americans are waking up. There will be a price to pay. There will be a serious price to pay, because now nobody trusts anybody in government. So if there's a real, real threat, well, you know, the kid cried wolf far too many times. But it's better for us to see who they really are. What is with the Supreme Court? Where's the decision? I thought Sunday was supposed to be the decision on the mandate. It's Tuesday. What's going on? What do you think? Give us a call, 833-33-GORKA. Tell us whether you trust anyone on the Supreme Court. That's 833-334-6752. We have an amazing slate of guests today, including none other than Marjorie Taylor Greene. And a whole hour with that British brain, Douglas Murray, Robert Wilkie, former Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and on and on and on. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you don't want to miss a second. Don't touch that dial.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.